perspective of a local health department, and I'm going to talk a little bit about what we've been doing with regard to banning trans fats in our community. So, again, if you can figure out what the connection is, go ahead and share it with us. I'm speaking today, I'm Karen Hacker, and I'm speaking today for Marsha Lazar, who was unable to be with us, but I also want to give kudos to Stacey King, who helped put the presentation together and is kind of taking this effort forward for the health department. I was the interim health department for the city of Cambridge for about 9 months, and this is something that I worked with during that time. It has continued as I've moved into another role after that, but I think it's an interesting story and really speaks to how community collaborators can push agendas of policy forward. So first of all, trans fat. Not sure everybody here knows it. It got quite popularized in the last year. You may be very aware of it. But the bottom line is that trans fat is made by adding hydrogen to unsaturated fat, fatty acids. And as a result of that, you end up with this very nice, very sustainable, has a great shelf life, fat product, which is particularly great for frying because it actually comes, I don't know if anyone has ever seen it, but it actually comes in a solid form and it can get melted. It can be used over and over again as frying oil. It's quite easy to clean. Some folks have told us you can use it 6 times before you actually get rid of it. This was introduced, as folks may know, around, I want to say, 70s, 80s. It was actually thought at that time to be the thing we should all be doing. Margarine is certainly at that point in time was trans fat, although now you can get margarine without trans fat in it. And bottom line is we've now found out that this fat is not so good for us. So why is it bad for you? Well, there's been preeminent work that's been done by Walt Willett at Harvard School of Public Health. He happens to actually be a resident of Cambridge, so he's been quite a consultant on all this process, which is that trans fat actually seems not only to do the normal things that fat does, but it actually also decreases the good cholesterol, decreases HDL, while also increasing LDL, which makes it particularly onerous. And so there are lots of estimations that have come out of late in terms of what would happen if we just eliminated this from the American diet, and you get things like decreasing heart disease by enormous numbers and particularly decreasing diabetes too by about 40%. So probably everybody remembers when New York hit the papers, I think it was about a year ago now, saying that they were going to ban trans fats, and most of the public health community at that was, we were all sort of in shock that they could actually do that. We wanted to know, like, what would our inspectors do when they hit the streets? How are they going to actually do this? But since that time, there have been 11 other cities that have actually done this, including Philadelphia and Chicago, that are considering bans, and 11 states are actually considering at the policy level. In fact, Massachusetts is one of those states. A lot of our restaurants, I think, would prefer if the state would just do it because then it wouldn't be a city-by-city kind of experience. The other thing that's happening is school systems are also looking at what they have on their menus and considering alternatives. I think one of the things that's been so great is that because of the New York ban, we've seen some very large chains actually go trans-fat free, which is having a huge impact on the availability of trans-fat-free products, which was one of the big challenges initially to restaurants moving in this direction. So we've got the Cheesecake Factory, Obampin, Legal Seafoods, California Pizza Kitchen, Wendy's, KFC, McDonald's, and the list keeps going. If you're from the Northeast, Dunkin' Donuts is even trying to do this. So the good news is it's moving forward. The one thing I do want to always, I always tell people when I talk about this is, remember, this is not an obesity prevention strategy. You can still eat a lot of fat and still gain a lot of weight, even if it doesn't have trans fats in it. Nice little cartoon. So, how did we start this whole thing? Well, for those of you who don't know Cambridge, and for those of you who do, it's an extremely progressive community. It's often been referred to as the People Republic of Cambridge. And they have this habit, the city council, of figuring out whatever the newest, most recent, interesting thing is. And pretty soon after this New York ban got announced, and I just so you know, I started as the interim health department director in July, and this was my first city council order. So basically, 2 weeks later, shows up on the city council order. They wanted us to look at trans fat and a potential ban in the city of Cambridge. And we, as I said, also had Walt Willett, who happened to live next door to one of the city councilors, and he had been bending her ear that this would be a good thing for us to do. So basically, when we responded to the city council at that time, this was relatively new. There wasn't a lot of information out there. We were talking to New York, talked to our colleagues in Boston and other neighboring communities to kind of figure out what they were planning to do. And our initial proposal was that rather than an initial ban, we should consider some educational time. We also happen to have a lot of restaurants in Cambridge. We have a number of eminent universities. And we felt that there was a chance that they were also quite progressive. So we decided initially, at least, that we wanted to talk with them about whether or not we could move forward on this rather than, as I said, moving directly to a ban. So we actually approached our local business associations, and they invited us in. I remember going actually to the Central Square Business Association, again, for anyone who knows Cambridge, which has a large number of restaurants there, to talk about this issue. And lo and behold, what we found out was that they were extremely open to this, and that there were a number of questions that came up in that process, most of which actually had to do with the financial implications of removing trans fat. And in many cases, that was sort of in that middle range restaurant, the hamburger place, where they're doing a lot of business, and to have to buy trans fat free oils that could not be cleaned and used as frequently was actually going to increase their bottom line, and they would actually have to add, you know, their hamburgers were going to cost more. On the other hand, we had a number of restaurants, particularly the ethnic restaurants and some of the higher level restaurants that were actually already trans fat free. One of the things that was amazing to me was two of the restaurants that had fought the tobacco ban actually were way ahead of the curve when it came to trans fat. So that was actually pretty interesting. The restaurant business organization, actually turned around and developed their own survey. And they surveyed all of the restaurants in their own organization, which was great, gave us the results. It did this completely on their own, gave us the results. So bottom line is it really began to feel like a partnership. As I mentioned, we found out that a lot of them were already trans fat free. I think there were only a few that weren't. But we also found out that there was a lot of education that people needed. The first initial thing that people think of is it's the fry oil. And that, at this point in time, as I said, seems to be a burgeoning market for trans fat-free fry oil, so that's actually not that difficult to make a change. But the other area that you see a lot of trans fat used is in baked goods, which is a little bit harder because, you know, if you have a restaurant, it's one thing if you get a baked good that's sealed and has all the little information on it in terms of the content, but it's another thing if you don't know if the, you know, cake that you're getting from the local bakery in the next town uses trans fat or not. Pies, there's a lot of chefs who feel that, you know, to get that specific texture to the crust, you need to use a solid oil, and trans fat offered that opportunity. But they were really willing to be our partners, and in fact, they went ahead and developed their own brochure, which we were then able to disseminate. So talk about public-private partnerships. This worked quite well for us. From there, these were some of the things that we found in the surveys that they did. As I already mentioned, they wanted to be leaders. In Cambridge, it's a good thing to kind of get out there in front of this issue. It's something that may actually attract folks to eat at your restaurant as opposed to repel them. They talked about, could we get like a little star in our windows saying we're trans fat free? There was definitely a need for further education. Just what products do I even have in my restaurant that I need to be aware of? Things that sometimes people wouldn't even think about. They wanted info and access to suppliers to actually go down to the restaurant supply houses, which are many cities, to sort of see side by side what are the price comparisons. There was talk of joint purchasing. Could we as restaurant groups actually drive the price down by buying together? And then they wanted to know, well, what was the city going to do for them with regard to incentives and promotion? They actually then reached out to another restaurant group, the Harvard Square Restaurant Group, and we got a very similar response from them. We did go to public hearing. They were actually at the public, in fact, you know, I want to think it was as typical. It was held during the day, so there weren't a lot of consumers who actually were able to get there. But a number of the restaurants showed up and basically said that they were willing to participate in this, but they would prefer not to have a band directly. They really were interested in having some kind of a voluntary process. There was a variety of meetings that then took place, and out of that public hearing, we actually established a task force, which included all of those folks up there and has now been running basically since the beginning of September. And they've had four meetings already, and it's staffed by the health department. And also, in our city, the inspectional services or restaurant inspections is actually not done in the health department. It actually goes to inspectional services, so they're at the table too. So these are some of the activities that the task force has been engaged in, trying to figure out who and what to target. Other ways to engage other restaurants that are outside of these two sort of centers of restaurateurs. This self-assessment for consumers as well to sort of figure out what restaurants are actually offering. Goals for voluntary compliance. And then the object was to submit recommendations to the city council. So at this point, we're looking at recommending a phased-in ban with education prior to the ban, which includes both, as I mentioned, restaurant and customer and consumer education. We're going to have to invest some resources to be able to do this, both from the health department side and from the inspectional services side. There's been talk about incentives that could be used, particularly when it comes to awareness, you know, so which of the restaurants in Cambridge, for example, are trans fat free. There's a lot of concern about regulation, as you can imagine, and how to do this. And I know our colleagues in New York actually presented on trans fat during the conference, and one of the big concerns is how did you train your inspectors to actually do this, you know, to go into the backs of the restaurants and to sort of figure it out, and what kind of regulatory issues are there, whether the fines, what are those kinds of things. Again, this is one of those unfunded mandates, and the timeline and then the evaluation. Our lessons learned is basically our community is always ahead of the curve. So as I said, I have to sort of read the newspapers to figure out what the next big issue is going to be before it hits the health department's desk. But also that if the health department is willing to then go ahead and support a ban, we're going to have to allocate staff and figure out how to do that vis-a-vis all the other priorities that are going on. I think more important than anything in my experience, and one of the reasons we actually submitted this, was that we were just absolutely so thrilled by the outpouring of support that we got from the restaurant community. And I don't know if public health professionals usually consider restaurants to be their partners in actually moving policy forward, but I think that was something that we really experienced, and we really want to celebrate that. We've seen a couple other communities in Massachusetts also move this way and also find that many of their restaurants were much more supportive of this than initially anticipated. So finally, I just want to thank everyone for their efforts, all the Cambridge Health Department staff, the TransFat Committee in Cambridge, the Cambridge Health Alliance. We're an integrated system, so our health department for Cambridge is actually within a hospital system. City manager, who is our equivalent of our mayor, and the council itself. Thanks a lot.